Ruin My Childhood.
Hello, and welcome to Ruin My Childhood, the podcast where we decide if some things are better left in the past. I'm Kat.
I'm Mike.
And today we are going to be discussing Cool Runnings.
Cool Runnings,
man. What do you
remember
about this movie?
I'm pretty sure I remember most of this movie. We both really like this movie. I think we watched it the last time the Winter Olympics came around, which is why we watched it this time around. And, I mean, it's a pretty simple plot as far as I remember. It's just about Jamaicans who get into bobsledding, and there's, like, a disgraced coach, and they make it, and then they crash.
Pretty much sums it up.
And then the other thing I remember is Dougie Doug. I don't know any of the characters' names, but he has a song. He's like, "Yes, Jamaica, we have a bobsled team." Like, he has a funny song, and that's really all I remember.
I don't think it goes like that, though.
It probably doesn't go like that, but that's how I remember it.
I remember this movie having a lot of feel-good island vibes, pretty much. So my family's from the Caribbean, and anytime a movie is set in the Caribbean, it just feels good to me. So I think that's where the main appeal of this movie was for me. But I basically just remember that for whatever reason, these young men decide that they want to go to the Olympics and they miss their chance. And so they figure that bobsledding is their way to do it.
Right.
And I don't really remember much else, which is odd because I've seen this movie quite a few times, but I guess I just brain dump after.
I've watched it with you at least three or four times since we've been together. Only other thing to talk about brain dump is every time we watch this movie right after, I Google like the true story, like what actually happened, and I always forget. Like, I could not tell you the differences between real life and this movie right now.
Oh, I know that it's nothing like reality. That's all I know.
Yeah, but I couldn't tell you any specifics. But I'm ready just to watch it.
Yeah, let's watch it.
I can see clearly now the rain's gone.
Ready! Ready! Feel the rhythm! Feel the rhyme! Get on up! It's bobsled time! Cool running!
All right, we are back from watching Cool Runnings, and that is a delightful movie. I don't remember the acting being quite so campy.
Yeah, it's definitely a campy movie. It's, you know, it came out in 93, I believe, like the year before John Candy died.
Oof, and yeah, he was looking really rough in this movie. Like, he looked like he might drop dead at any moment.
Yeah,
he had liver disease or something. Yeah, he did not look good. It wasn't just like he was huffing and puffing, like he was going to have a heart attack. He looked like he had liver disease or something. Like, he was not well, and it was very obvious. It's kind of rough to watch him, actually, like, knowing that he was pretty much on his way out.
Yeah, it's really hard to watch actors like him and Chris Farley knowing that they died so shortly after, like, their movies that came out.
And right. And then there's this one scene where they're actually at the Olympics, and he meets he runs into three men who he used to compete with in the past, and one of them says, "Jesus, what have you done to yourself?" And it's just like, oh yeah, that's too real.
And they do it a couple times in the movie. Like, there's a photo of a young in shape man that's supposed to be John Candy's character, but younger, and he looks at it a couple times. And he goes, "Oh man, what have I done?" Like, he says it a couple of times.
Now, I think he was, in real life, I think he was always overweight, though.
I mean, he's been overweight. I mean, he was in Stripes in the late 70s. He was overweight. Spaceballs, he was overweight. Uncle Buck, he was overweight. Like, every movie I've seen him in, he's overweight.
Oh.
And I looked up, this is terrible, but I looked up how much did John Candy weigh, and it said for most of his life, he weighed around 300 pounds.
Okay, so there are a lot of reality TV shows these days with, like, My 600-Pound Life. And in this movie, he looks like he's 450 in this movie.
I don't think he's that, no. He's a big dude as well, though. No, I don't think he was.
Because he was tall, too. So to, like, be that big, he had to be up there.
Nah, I don't think so. The internet said he's about 300 pounds.
I think that him in his obviously deteriorating health, and the fact that he died right after this movie, like, it does kind of dampen it a little bit. It's hard to ignore.
Right. Well, this time it was a little bit harder for me to watch because normally I go on Wikipedia and be like, what was the real story after watching the movie? But I did it before the movie this time, before we actually watched it. And it kind of took the magic away because this is a Disney movie and they completely Disneyfied the movie.
Yeah, they really did. So do you want to do like a quick recap of the movie and then what the happened in real life?
Yeah, so this movie, I think I pretty much got the summary at the top of the episode before we watched the movie. But basically, in a nutshell, there's a man named Derice. He's kind of like the star of the movie. His actor's name is just Leon. He's got one name, like Madonna.
like Madonna.
But he is like Jamaica's like favorite guy. He's like running around town. Everyone's saying like, you're amazing. And everyone's like super happy that he's going to go to the Olympics.
Jamaica's favorite guy. Like, it's an island, but it's not that small.
No, but it seems like everybody knows who he is, at least in his town.
In Kingston.
Right? And it's pretty much like known he is going to go to the Olympics. His father was an Olympian and he's even faster than his father is. And so he goes to the big qualifying race and this man named Junior trips and he ends up taking him and a guy named Yule out of commission. So all three of them were like the favorites to go.
Yule Brenner.
So what ends up happening in a nutshell is he goes to like the Olympian coordinator for Jamaica and is like, you got to rerun the race. And he's like, I can't. And he sees a picture of this like white guy on the wall. And he's like, who's that? Like, we don't have any white Olympians. He goes, no, he used to be a bobsledder who came because he had this theory that Jamaican sprinters would be great bobsledders. So he gets this idea that they should do that. He gets his friend. He gets the other two Olympians who, you know, trips and forms a Jamaican bobsled team. And everybody hates them.
All right.
John Candy was a former Olympic bobsledder, and he ended up cheating. So he's disgraced. He's their coach. All the other teams hate them. Everybody wants them to fail. And they end up doing, they qualify. They have a really bad first run. They have an amazing second run, and then they crash the third run. And that's pretty much it.
Nice. Now, what happened in real life?
So in the real life, I couldn't figure out who the actual masterminds of this whole thing were, but it turns out that they were Air Force and like Army soldiers for like Jamaica, and they were never former Olympians or people who were trying to get to the Olympics. They tried to find people like that and they couldn't, and then they ended up getting these guys from the military.
They were just bored.
I guess I have no idea. The other thing that was weird is, so this was before the Olympics were split, which happened in like 1994. That's the whole thing. Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan. So back then, it was still one big Olympic Games. And it turns out that the qualifiers for sprinting would have actually taken place after the qualifiers for bobsledding.
Aww.
So that makes it not really work. The other thing is John Candy's character is completely fictionalized. They actually had an entire team of trainers. They had a bunch of different people helping them out, and not one of them was a disgraced American bobsledder who was a gold medalist. Also, America did not win a medal in bobsledding after 1948 until like the 2000s. So the whole premise, that part doesn't really make sense.
Well, I mean, like, why would America win in a winter sport against Germany and Austria where they were like genetically engineered?
We have over 100 gold medals now. For the winter games.
In bobsledding?
Okay. Yeah, we have. So we got some in the last like 10, 15 years. We've got some.
Weird. So yeah. In real life, we don't know who actually masterminded this entire thing.
I mean, I didn't look into it that hard. I didn't put too much effort in it. And then the last kind of thing was, it turns out that like everybody, all the international community thought it was amazing that there was a Jamaican team, and they all like banded together to help him out. Like, there's a scene in the
Jamaicans
movie.
Jamaicans are delightful people.
Right. And they probably shared that dank weed.
Oh my God.
And then the other
thing
that's
kind of weird.
Wouldn't that disqualify you? I mean, maybe if they find out.
I mean, but I don't think that marijuana is one of those drugs that's performance enhancing.
It isn't, but it is actually, you would be disqualified if you had it in your system. And then the other thing that was kind of weird is,
never go to the Olympics.
Oh, you shouldn't be talking about that. The other thing that was a little weird is they have this whole like international winter sports committee that oversees all the winter sports in the movie. It turns out that each sport has its own committee, so that whole subplot in the movie didn't really make sense.
So I thought that was a committee just for bobsledding, though.
No, it was for the international, it was the Alliance of Winter Sports or something like that. Because remember when they show up, John Candy's like, where do I register for bobsled? Where do I register for bobsled? And you saw people
like,
skiing,
why wouldn't he know?
Ice skates. Because he was part of the American team. They had people who did that for him. Mm. He was just the athlete.
Yeah, it seemed like when they got there, things are sort of on track when they're on their way to the Olympics. They have a few hiccups and then they get there. And then you find out that this guy has no idea what he's doing.
No, he had zero idea what was going on. They didn't have any kind of bobsled once they got there. So in the movie, he, like you mentioned earlier, he runs into three of his former teammates. He like begs one of them, like, give me a sled, I'll do anything. And like they give him this like rickety old sled. And that's the last major difference. So, or two major differences between the movie and the real life was, in the movie, they gave them this rickety old bobsled, which ended up being the what caused them to crash, is that it like disintegrated and they crashed. In real life, they just were very inexperienced and they took a turn too fast. In the movie, it made it seem like they were actually contenders for medals, even though they had a really bad run. First run, they had an amazing second run, and they were saying that they were on world record pace for their third run before they crashed. That's not true. That would be really remarkable. Yeah, they were nowhere near it. They were actually like almost dead last in real life. And then the other thing that they didn't mention is bobsledding has two-man and four-man teams. They were also competing in the two-man team, and they did finish the two-man events and finish like
crash.
Second to last. After the crash, yeah.
Yeah. So they have actual footage of the crash that they used in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's horrifying to watch.
Oh, it's scary.
It makes me feel nauseous watching it because if anything had gone down like a millimeter in any direction, they could have snapped their necks. It's terrifying.
I don't know how they didn't.
Their heads are up at like a 90 degree angle against the side of, what is that, the run called? That thing. It's not a chute. It's not a slide.
The track?
Track? Is it a track?
It's a track.
It looks like they could have all broken their necks.
I don't understand how they didn't. I really don't.
It's because they're relaxed.
Well, I guess now that we know the
they
differences.
They got that dank weed.
They got the dank weed. They were completely relaxed. Oh, man. So I was completely wrong about the song that I sang at the beginning.
Yeah. You sing it all the time, like just in regular life.
I do
you sing
every
song
time
all the time, and I know that it doesn't sound anything like it.
Every time
like
Jamaica
it.
Pops up, I say, "Yes, Jamaica, we have a bobsled team," but it's not how it goes. It goes, "Jamaica, you won't believe. Yes, we have a bobsled team. We've got Darice the first, or something like that," and he like talks about all the members of the team.
And it's absolutely nothing like the rhythm,
it's nothing like
cadence,
that.
or melody that you do. But I mean, when you sing anything, it's nothing like the melody anyway.
That's true.
So. That's not surprising. I think you just kind of took the melody from Under the Sea, but you couldn't actually replicate it, and then you stuck their words in.
Under the sea, down where it's wetter, it is much better. Take it from me.
You should stop.
Some people say you know them can't believe. Jamaica, we have a bobsled team. We have
yes.
Wanderers.
Hello, and Junior.
You'll Sanka.
The fastest of the fastest of Jamaican sprinters. Go to Olympics, fight for Jamaica.
I mean, this movie, the characters were super likable. It was still fun to watch. But it's just, it's weird going into it knowing how different it was. It did kind of like, this was kind of BS.
Right, yeah. You know, I feel like the next time we watch it, we won't be dwelling on the reality of the situation. And I would watch this again. I'm going to watch this again.
I guarantee the next time
it again, and I'm
going to
enjoy
up.
It. One thing that's interesting about this movie for me is the first, I'd say, 15 minutes of the film, the scenes where it's just the young men, the acting is so stilted and awkward and just campy as hell.
Right.
And their performances actually get better when they're with more experienced actors.
I mean, that makes sense.
So the man who plays Junior's father, he elevates his performance. But when it's just the young men together, it's really interesting how different of a level they're performing at.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I mean, that happens. I can't remember what acted, but there's some like young actor who talked about how he was like terrible, and then he worked with like somebody like a Gary Oldman type person.
Right. So, I mean, that is absolutely a thing. I think.
Oh, it was the Harry Potter actors.
More than any education whatsoever, I think actors universally get better from working with people who are better than they are. And part of that is because when you have someone who is fully there and fully available and honest with you in their performance and is giving you more to work with, then you're fully in that moment and you're able to be honest. Because there's sometimes when you get on set and the other actor, they're saying their lines, they're going through the motions, and they're looking at your eyes, but they're not looking in your eyes. They're not really communicating. It's like talking to a wall.
Well, it's like if you have a good actor.
It doesn't matter how good you are, how committed you are, it's going to change your performance. And I see that a lot with, especially with younger actors. They, you know, you're self-conscious when you're starting out, and it's so much easier to slip out of that moment and not take it as seriously and be, you know, embarrassed on some level, I think, is what happens. So, yeah, it's very noticeable in this movie.
Right, and once they get around John Candy, like, they all get better as well. Like, I think he was like the glue who kind of held them together. And I agree that when Junior's with his father, his eyes had a little bit more soul to them. There's something right. there.
Dougie Doug is solid. The
oh, Dougie
way
Doug
through,
is Sanka
I love
was
Dougie
great.
Doug.
Kiss my lucky egg.
He's hilarious. I know he had the like. Oh God! So at the end, they walk their after the crash. They pick up their bobsled and walk it through the finish line just so they could finish that race and have that moment. And this dude has his lucky egg. I think it's like a wooden egg or something.
No, it's a real egg.
Had with
they
him.
Check to see. He checks to see if it's broken several times.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a real egg.
Anyway, so he's got his lucky egg, whatever it's made out of, and he has it with him all the time, and he kisses it, and he asks if other people want to kiss it for good luck. And at the it's at the after the crash, right? He has his lucky egg, but they're wearing like these skin tight little outfits. Like, where did he keep
this egg?
You
know what I loved about this movie as well with Sanka is
does he have a cloaca? Can he shove it back
put
up
it in
there
bum.
For safekeeping?
Put it in his bum.
No. That would be, it's like a vaginus. It's just one hole that birds have. Cloaca, right?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, that's pretty much what that is.
I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense. I still don't know how he would have gotten it out of anywhere. Are those suits in two pieces? They look like they were one piece. This bothers me.
I have
me.
No idea how he did it. The other thing that I really
answers.
Liked about Sanka was Yule, who was like mean and like threatened everybody.
Yul Brynner.
He made fun of him the entire time. Like, he wasn't intimidating him. He was like, I'll draw a line on your head and make you look like a butt and stuff like that. And he kept like making fun of him being bald like the entire movie. And then there's a scene towards the end of the movie where they get in a bar fight with the Germans, and it's Yul and Junior fighting on all of them. And then Sanka's like square dancing, and he like takes his a hat off of a woman. He's like, howdy or goodbye or whatever. And then he like runs and jumps across the entire bar, and he's like, yippee-ki-yay, and like kicks a German in the face. <I know.
laughs> It's hilarious.
Yeah, he was great.
I do appreciate, though, that Yul Brynner comes around towards the end of the film, you know, for the greater good. For his brotherhood.
Well, and the other thing that's funny, I really enjoyed Yul Brynner, where he wants to get off the island.
I think we need to clarify, the character's name is
Yul Brynner,
not the actor Yul Brynner.
Is there an actor named Yul
Which
Brynner?
Which actually is like, yes. Oh. Which is why it's so funny that his name is Yul Brynner. But this happens a lot in the islands. People will just like the sound of a celebrity's name, and they'll name their child that.
But
it's weird.
The Yul Brynner character is like this like muscle dude, and he's like super upset that he's not at the Olympics, and he of course blames Junior, and then he's like does arm wrestling to raise money for the Olympics, and he's getting into bar fights, but then he ultimately teaches Junior how to like stand up for himself. But there's a scene like where he's like, I'm tired of you, Sanka. You're like everybody else in the island. You're stupid and contempt in your ways, and you're willing to, yeah, like, you don't realize that there's a whole nother world out there. And he is like, I know what I want. I'm different. I'm using the Olympics to get out, and I'm going to live here. And he shows a picture of Buckingham Palace, and Sanka's just like, you idiot. And just like,
that's Buckingham Palace.
He goes, that's, you better marry the queen. And they're like, what? He goes, that's Buckingham Palace. And it's so funny because it's like, Sanka, you're like, they kind of portray him like an idiot, but he's street smart, and he actually is pretty smart.
He just has ADHD. Yeah.
He's the street. He was great. Like, I like when he was with the kids at the beginning of the movie because he's the pushcart derby driver. And he's like,
he's got his minions.
Yeah, he's got all these little kids that help him with the cart. And like every time they're like doing something and they're not like running, he's like, get back to work. And he like yells at children.
Can we talk about that pushcart race at the beginning?
Yeah, the pushcart derby.
So these pushcarts, it's basically like what are those matchbox cars?
The derbies?
What do you call those?
I
something,
yeah,
derby.
It's like the
something wood,
yeah,
derby.
Soapbox derbies.
What
soapbox
do you call
derbies,
them?
That's what they're called.
Soapbox derby. Anyway, these cars are basically that but bigger and supposedly with a steering wheel. And they put a little kid on the front of the car, and I can't figure out what his purpose is other than ballast or something.
Dispersion.
Are they just a weight?
I have no idea.
They just put this child like in harm's way at the front of these carts and send them down a hill.
Nothing holding them on. Like they're literally just like on it, holding onto it, and they're like ramming each other.
Yeah, yeah. That was pretty intense. I think that would be a good time to go see
right.
one of those.
But overall, like this movie, there's a lot of great moments. And like, I love when they're doing the little training montage when they're like running around the lake and the John Candy's going to throw snowballs at them, but they saw it coming. They all do it. And then when they're trying to, one of the things that I've never really noticed or thought about before, but this time around, there's a point when they're trying to practice their push starts. And they have the bobsled on this speed skating track. And I'm like, there's no way in hell that they'd be allowed to bring a bobsled onto that track. And
right.
then just carrying that thing around. They say it weighs 600 pounds. Now, Darice, he's a big dude. He's strong. Yule, I get it. But if with four people taking 600 pounds, you're doing, you know, less than 200 pounds each. But that's still a lot of weight just to be carrying long distances on your shoulder.
I mean, they've been training. So, like, how long is this entire film supposed to cover?
It's, like, less than 3 months. Yeah.
Oof. Yeah.
It's less than 3 months. And I'm saying, like, strength, like, carrying 150 to 200 pounds, like, I believe that those guys can do it. I can't believe Sanka can do it. But the other three, yeah. But carrying it for any amount of time, like, to get it from the storage to wherever this ice skating rink is, all these things aren't normally in the same place at the Olympics. There's normally like some drive time. Like, how the hell do they move this thing around?
Right. It's like one thing to deadlift that much weight. Like, I could lift you and toss you, but I couldn't lift you up and hold you over my head. There's a big difference.
And walk like a quarter of a mile to another facility.
Nah, dude, I'd drop you on your face.
Yeah, you would.
You really didn't know that Yul Brynner was an actor?
I recognize the name, but what's
The King and I?
I haven't seen it.
What?
I haven't seen it.
Oh my god.
I haven't seen it, Katrina.
My life is a lie.
Let's see.
Anywho. Yeah, so that's part of the reason his name was so funny.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely knew it was somebody else, but I couldn't place who it was. I like when Yul Brynner like punches a hockey player for no reason.
For real. Like the guy just like goes up to him on the ice and he like freaks out and pushes him over.
And then they had a slow clap at the end of the movie.
Yes, I very much appreciated the slow clap.
And the Germans.
I thought it was timely.
Right.
The what?
The Germans even slow clapped, and the American guy who didn't like John Candy.
They did.
Slow kept.
It was a good moment.
It was a good moment.
And you know, reflecting back on it, I think the reason that I never remember the plot of this movie is because it's not clearly defined into three acts.
No, I agree.
It's like, And if anything, I'd say that's kind of a testament to how entertaining the movie is. There isn't any one part that lags or slows down.
The pacing is great. It goes real quick.
Yeah, it's got great pacing. So you just kind of like charge straight ahead through this entire movie. It's entertaining. You've got all of the one-liners. You've got really good character development.
There's two really good montages. Like, yeah, there's a montage at the beginning where they're all trying to raise money. So there's like a kissing booth, arm wrestling. Sanka's like dancing and singing on the street. And then there's the training. There's two training montages. But yeah, it's pretty entertaining all the way through.
And while it is disappointing that it has absolutely zero basis in reality, I think despite this, it's still a really enjoyable, motivational movie.
And it's weird that they didn't make it based off the true events, because this movie came out 5 years after the events of this movie.
Have you seen Pocahontas?
No, it's not. I mean, the cartoon? Yeah, I know that's not. I mean, there aren't talking raccoons and talking willow trees, so that's definitely not real. But
Disney has a loose relationship with reality, and they seem less concerned with telling the story than they do with taking the name of something and creating a whole other story
like,
around
Pocahontas
it.
Pocahontas at least was like several hundred years in the past. Like, this literally happened between two Olympics. Like, it was within the time frame of another Olympics that this movie came out, that they at least started making it. And the real story would still be really interesting. Like, they've done other sporting movies that are more accurate. Like, it's just weird that they had to take it a completely different route. Like, they still could have had the humor in it and had, because like two of the guys were brothers in the real story. Like, that would be a big like Hallmark Disney moment, to have like two brothers at the Olympics together representing their country when they couldn't go. You know, they could have kept some of it together.
That's
like
true.
Why not have a set of brothers in there when there was Brothers Real Life? Like, there's just, it's just so random.
Although I do feel like it is slightly less impressive to make it to the Olympics when your entire country fits on an island.
Yeah.
Is that bad?
Yeah, you're terrible.
I mean, it's like not as densely populated as Tokyo.
Right.
Like, Kingston is still pretty rural.
Yeah.
But, you know, good on them. Good on them. Well done, boys.
You know what other scene I really liked? And it was, I think it was like a good scene where, like, I think this was the first scene where I kind of was like, oh, they all kind of have their emotional things. They're together. They're talking about naming the sled. And Junior says he wants to name it
Tallulah.
And everyone laughs. And Sanka's like, that sounds like a $2
sounds
hooker
like a
name.
$2 hooker.
Like, everyone's like, that's a terrible name. He's like, that's my mother's name. They're like, oh, no, that's a pretty good name. We'll consider it. And then Dereese is like,
I like it.
Cool Runnings. And then that, like, Cool Runnings doesn't just mean Cool Runnings. It had to have like some other meaning to it, which I did not write down.
What was, I don't remember it. Was there
a
meaning?
Yeah, he says, they're like, John Candy goes, Cool Runnings, what does that mean? And he's like, he says something, it's like a three sentence meaning to the name Cool Runnings. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. But that was just me.
Yeah, I don't remember that
at
all.
Yeah, that totally happened.
So what was John Candy's character doing in all these years since he was disgraced at the Olympics?
So that's kind of how Dereese got him on board, was basically asking him that question. So Dereese goes up to him and is like, hey, I'm my father's son. You tried to get him to be a bobsledder. Like, you should do it with us. And he's like, no, I haven't even looked at a bobsled. And he goes, you still have a bobsled poster. And John Candy like rips it off the wall. And he's like, there, is that good enough for you? And then Dereese goes, why are you here? You came here to start a bobsledding team with Jamaicans and then you never left. So clearly you're still searching for something. And that's kind of when he decided to do it. So I mean, this character is completely fictionalized. So,
right. I just wish we knew what happened between trying to form a Jamaican bobsled team and, you know, 450 pounds.
And only, you know, 15 years had gone by.
Right. Like, what has he been doing? Does he run that bar?
Yeah,
because it kind of seems like maybe he runs the bar. But then when he's in Canada, like, who's watching his bar for him?
I have no idea. But it did seem like it was his bar, because like he just ripped a poster down, and Dries did ask him like, "Who's that? Like, why do you have that poster?" Right. So I didn't really get that either. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like there might have been scenes missing from it, and maybe they just cut them out for time's sake.
Possibly. I have no idea. Possibly. But yeah, it does seem strange that he would sit on an island for 15 years and do nothing and then just want to go and do this.
That's the thing about island life. It's like you get out there and nothing matters as much as it used to.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. Like when we go to...
Which is a good thing.
When we go to Puerto Rico, and a we bad completely thing. Relax. Like, I get that.
Okay, so St. Croix, where my family lived, which is near Puerto Rico, a homeless man ran for mayor and almost won.
That's crazy.
Like, that is how laid back the islands are. And, I mean, depending on what kind of island, like, in Hawaii, I mean, Hawaii is a totally different vibe, and it's still like that. Like, we had friends who were building a house, and it was supposed to take 6 months, and it took 2 years, because all of their workers would just be like, oh, surf's up, I'll see you tomorrow, and peace out. So, I mean, like, it is kind of understandable that maybe he just kind of settled into island life, and that was that for several years.
Man, like, whatever market lived or was right where he lived must have made a ton of money.
Right, right,
he probably ate enough for two Jamaican families.
Oh, my God. Like, I feel... It's sad to... It was really sad to see him looking so rough.
I've never really noticed how bad he was, like health-wise, until watching this time around, because I grew up watching John Candy movies. I love John Candy.
Right.
I always have. Like, I'm not going to say I've seen every movie of it, but I've seen several of his movies many, many times. And I think he's legitimately great. Like, people want him in movies so much. Like, in Home Alone, they filmed that, like, all of his scenes in, like, a 12-hour period because they can only get him on one day, but they really wanted him. And like I thoroughly enjoy watching him in everything that I see him in. So it was kind of rough watching this and realizing, oh, damn, he died like a year after this movie came out. That's really sad.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's a certain thing that happens.
Dad died at 30.
Really, with like flat out obese comedians, is they tend to kind of be married to that image of themselves, because they can be funny in their own right and be hilarious and have everything going for them, but they get so wrapped up in their identity as being this self-deprecating obese comedian,
right. and
like the physicality of that, and it's just it's such a different vibe for
people.
I
was reading.
To see them and like if he had lost the weight, like how awkward would that transition be for his audience, you know, seeing him like go through a drastic weight loss and then like had the loose skin. And it's just such a drastic change from where he was to healthy.
We can ask Jonah Hill. He knows how it is.
Yeah. But he was never that big.
He got really big. He got really fat and then he lost all that weight. And then he got even fatter when he lost the weight. And then he got skinny again. He's been yo-yoing for a couple of years. But I was reading John Candy actually, like his grandfather and his father died of heart attacks young. Like his father died of a heart attack at like 30 years old. And so it said, like this article I read said John Candy had, in 1990, started trying to eat healthier and he gave up smoking to try to reduce the stress. But I mean, he died when he was like 45 years old. So 40 years of destroying your body is not going to fix it in 5 years.
Right. Like I'm not here to fat shame anyone, but when you're that big, you know what you're doing to your body. And if you have like a family history of that, I don't understand the disconnect between knowing what's going to happen and not doing anything. That's just mind boggling to me. I can't understand it. But, you know, food addiction is just as severe as any other addiction.
So I mean, when I'm in a mode like a state of mind where I'm not happy, like I tend to eat a little bit more. I really want to go out and get junk food. It's tough and it's really hard. Wow, this podcast really took a turn.
It did.
But yeah, no, I get it. Like I feel bad. Like I think that's what affected me most this time around. Is like, we were talking about it for quite a while after the movie ended, where we were just like, man, that was really sad.
Anyway, so, I mean, going back to this movie, you know, there were things that I had never noticed before, but I have a newfound appreciation for it in different ways, because the pacing was really good. It was very entertaining. I loved the one-liners, and even knowing that it is absolutely nothing like real life, I still liked the story.
You know what I noticed this time around that I never noticed before? Do you know what? Who did the music for this movie?
Hans Zimmer. I was not expecting to see that name.
Yeah, that was weird.
Was this a low point in his career?
No idea.
I felt sad for him because there was absolutely nothing unique about this score. As far as I could tell, there were random, you know, like pop songs and island music songs and some steel drum arrangements, but not like... not the type of score that you expect from Hans Zimmer.
Right. Well, the director...
maybe he had a friend who did this movie.
The director who did this movie has done a ton of movies that I love, or at least remember loving as a kid. So I never know how to pronounce his name. It's John Turteltaub. He did...
Taub? Yeah, probably Taub.
He did Three Ninjas, which I loved. He did While You Were Sleeping, which I know you like. Phenomenon, which both of us love.
I love that movie.
And then he did a bunch of other Disney movies. He did The Kid.
You know what I miss? I miss not thinking, oh, that's a crazy man, when I see John Travolta.
Or immediately noticing his wigs.
He has some good wigs.
He has some good wigs, but you know they're wigs.
I like that he embraces it. You know, see, you know, I have some respect for that, because it's like you see Dolly Parton, it's like, oh, she's got a cute wig on today. You see Beyonce, she's got a cute wig on today. I see John Travolta, I'm like, oh, that's a good wig. You know they're wigs. I don't see why it's any more shameful for a man than
right.
a woman.
It's him and Nicolas Cage.
You rock that wig, Johnny boy.
So him and Nicolas Cage have the wigs. I remember this is a joke from How Did This Get Made? But every time I think of Nicolas Cage moving from movie to movie, because he's had financial problems and he's always moving from one movie to the next, like immediately. He literally had one day between shooting of Con Air and... Face Off, and like Jason Manzoukas makes this joke. He goes, he spent that entire 24-hour period doing wig construction.
Has he been hard up this entire time? Because those movies came out a long time ago.
Yeah. I mean, during the 90s, he wasn't that bad. Like, he used to buy a house in like every city that he filmed a movie in.
What an idiot.
And then he sued his money manager for mishandling his money, saying he never warned him. And there's like tons of documents saying that he did.
He comes from a cinema dynasty. Like, is he just not communicating with anyone in his family that he would not know to not do those things?
He wanted
That's
to do
ridiculous.
It on his own. That's why he goes by Nicolas Cage. You know where Nicolas Cage's name comes from? Luke Cage.
I used to
Luke
know
Cage.
This.
That's where he got the Cage part from.
Wow. Oh, that's so depressing. What a nerd. Okay. Do you have anything else to talk
no,
about?
No, I think it's sufficient to say that this
Nicolas
became
Cage.
A tangent episode. And it's fine. I think this movie was delightful. And I would definitely watch it again.
I loved this movie.
And
I would watch this movie again next week.
Yeah, I would definitely watch it again. I thoroughly enjoyed it, even with me ruining it for myself by looking up the real life stuff beforehand instead of afterwards like
right,
I normally
so
do.
Like the looking up reality ruins it for a minute or two, but it doesn't ruin the movie.
The music's
great
too.
The movie kind of ruined John Candy for me a little bit, like maybe sad for him where I wasn't sad for him before, but the movie is not ruined and I love it and I would watch it again.
As soon as the music started, like it has like this Jamaican music and it has like, I can see clearly now, the rain is gone, like right when like it starts, like it felt good immediately, and the color palette was great, and I really liked Dougie Doug in this movie. He kept it light, and he was good, like consistently good. I enjoyed it.
Yep, feel good island movie takes me back to the Caribbean. I'm all for it. So, what are we going to listen to next time? Listen to what are we going to watch next?
I'll give
time?
You a hint. Baram you.
I don't know what that's
It's from Babe.
Pig in the City?
No, we're not going to do Pig in the City. That's the second one. We're going to do regular Babe, the first one.
Oh. Okay. Whenever you call me Babe, I just automatically mentally follow it with Pig in the City.
Yeah, you do that a lot. I also walk up to people all the time and be like, that'll do, Pig. That'll do.
That'll do, Pig. Yep. That'll do.
I'm actually really excited to watch that one. I haven't seen it in a long time. But where can our listeners find you, Katrina?
I am all over the internet at KatrinaOcity. Check out my YouTube channel. Subscribe. Hit the little bell next to it so YouTube tells you when I post new videos.
And also check out mbxpods.com. Check us out on Instagram, Twitter. And we are now on Vero, which is a weird new social media, but we're on it. So
we don't know what it does, but we're there.
So follow us on there too. Please like and share these episodes. Share it with your friends if you like listening. If you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/mdxpods.
All right. So we hope you come back next time, and thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, everybody.